Welcome to Philly Coco Presents Psy Project Spotlight, Episode 61. This is a developer's journey into making cool stuff. I am Kotaro.
I'm Steve.
I'm Aaron.
And we are Philly Coco, a Philadelphia-based Coco Heads community focused on Apple development that primarily, but not exclusively, means iOS, Mac, tvOS, watchOS, and visionOS development. Philly Coco's true desire is to take you higher on your own developer journey.
Oh my
How was that?
Huh? That was your impression of an AI, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I tried, you know. You know what's sad? Is that aside from the laughter and all that junk?
Yeah.
That was actually a clean read.
It was. The cleanest, because you slowed down, you focused, and you thought like a monotonous machine. And it worked.
It worked. Breaking news for today. For our today, which is March 5th, 2024, we just got released iOS 17.4 and Xcode 15.3, which is great. There's a lot of interesting things. VisionOS and all the other ones, all the other platforms are still in release candidate. I'm more excited about what's coming down the pike for VisionOS 1.1. But apparently there's some interesting things with iOS 17.4, aside from like some very, very important security fixes.
Yeah, apparently there's some important security fixes. And while we're recording here, I'm getting messages on our Slack about the API that I'm interested in looking at. So
breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news on our Slack. Join our Slack.
Indeed.
Oh, there it is. Finance kit. Well, there you go.
I think that might be what I'm looking for. So, so we can get into it. Do we have anything we want to talk about specifically about the these updates that have come out? Is there anything interesting about Xcode 15.3?
Aside from the fact that Xcode 15.3 allow you to develop for Vision 1.1 and hopefully get some much needed performance boosts and minor tweaks and fixes, I don't know particularly. I mean, aside from what I understand, the upgrades and the persona is supposed to be better. But aside from that, I'm not quite sure. Aside from like some minor like vision, Reality Kit and Vision and AR Kit specific fixes, I don't know how much improvement it is.
Did you see the John Prosser's review of Vision Vision Pro came out last night?
Yeah, it was.
That was wonderful. A wonderful review.
I thought it was a lame. You know, sometimes we forget about that as developers because we're so in the weeds. So in that context, the name again is John Prosper. Was it?
Yeah, like a Front Page Tech, FPTA.
Yeah,
FPT.
FPT. FPT. Yeah, which is a great channel. On YouTube, but one of the things that made apparently like it's actually designed for VisionOS in some ways in terms of spatial audio, so you want to actually watch that in the Vision Pro, so I might actually do that again. But one of the key points that was made about that, spoiler by the way, is this idea that he was hating on it in the beginning from a pure technical point of view because he has a background in film and video, so he can see the, you know, the technical flaws in this product, but from an everyday person, like, this is magic, you know, to them. Like,
it reminded me of my reaction to it too, because I had a similar reaction when I was doing the demo. Of course, I haven't used it as much, so, but just from the demo, I was like, well, I mean, this is interesting. I'm not that impressed by it because I could see all these flaws in it, and I, you know, so that's why I think that if I use it more often, I'd probably enjoy it more than just the demo. Mm-hmm. But the thing that stops me from buying it, honestly, is just that it's so expensive. I just like if it, I mean, it's really I think he's absolutely right about everything he says in there. But it's just so expensive. I can't. It's not enough. A glimpse of a possible future, 10 years, the future, whatever, as he said, that's a good point, and it's one that it was not lost on, I think, a lot of people, even if maybe they don't focus on that as much as they should. But that's not enough for me personally to shell out $4,000 right now.
I think it's kind of fascinating in terms of, like, if you wanted to get on the, I mean, the key point, I think, is, like, if you wanted to get on the, sort of on board the, I don't know the term, but I guess.
I don't know. If you want to get into this space early and build up early, the skills, that's the other reason I would think about buying it is that. Mm-hmm. But again, it's like so much. It's not even like $1,000. It's like $4,000. And that's just too much.
How much was the original iPhone? It was like 600.
I mean, it was a lot. And people thought that was way too much. So but you know, I've been thinking about it. If you're like an active developer, like if I had money coming in from app development, then I think it would probably make a lot of sense. And I will, mm-hmm. I was thinking that my little side project I'm doing, we'll talk about some point when I have more to talk about it. I think I might make a version of it for VisionOS if I have time, just because it's simple enough. It'll be like a window based thing, and I could probably get it to work just in the simulator.
And then I think if anything, if you can even just do the basic drag and drop component, if it has a drag and drop component to it, to drag and drop between windows and just share specific data points, I think there's something. You know, I hate that. Yeah, there's something like cool about this idea of like transferring from one window to another. Even though the demo that I was playing with was very simple, it was just a tech demo of like I can drag this text, this row of text, into another row of text. But in traditional like mouse clicky kind of thing, that's nothing new. But because you're kind of doing it from a kind of like this world, so to speak, right? I think there is a pseudo like interesting experience that you're creating in that space that's created in that space that just feels different. It just hits different.
I think that review, John's review, did a great job of showing that journey to seeing the magic, and it's just the way it's produced is so slick. And I really think that. I don't know him at all or anything, but that channel has really grown on me. Like, they've been putting out some really cool stuff. They did a really great documentary about Tim Cook recently that I thought was good, well produced, very slick. And I, you know, his sense of humor kind of works with me with mine too. So I like his regular show, but this new stuff they've been putting out is like highly produced content in this space is very welcome. So. I think everybody should watch the VisionOS review. I'll put a link in the show notes in case you haven't seen it. It's really well worth the watch. What does he call it? Like the only VisionOS review you need?
I wouldn't go there. But I feel like it complements. It was almost like a compliment to all the ones. If you like went on a binge and you decided to like watch all of them for some silly reason, they all
I watched a bunch.
Do. Yeah, they all kind of take it from a perspective of a tech reviewer, which, you know, all the specs, all the measurements, all the benchmarking, et cetera, all the walking in places you probably shouldn't be walking in.
Yeah.
Stress testing it or skiing or whatever.
Casey Neistat skateboarding around New York City.
Skateboarding around New York City, you know, just perpetuating the Vision Bro, you know, meme.
Yeah.
But I think it did kind of strike me funny because I have done some like just passing it to colleagues who are not particularly like I wouldn't call them like overly tech savvy. They are tech savvy, but they're not what you would call like programmers day to day. They don't care about the specs. They're not thinking about like does this thing have, you know, they're not worried about the price. They're not even going there because they don't have to worry about it, right? They're just experiencing it purely from like a point of view of just like, you know, what's the hype? Is this fun? Is this cool? And like, you know, 9 out of 10 times they're like in shock.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is the best review for like a normie, as we might say, like for a normal non tech reviewer, non programmer, someone doesn't understand how the technology works. It really, as best as I've seen a video, like a YouTube video, try to capture what the magic is behind this and kind of explain what Apple is going for, kind of seeing the bigger picture, seeing the forest for the trees there. I think it does a really good job. And by the end of that video, I was on board with John's perspective, I think.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I will have to say, it's probably for better for another time, but like, again, I think we've talked about this, or I've certainly talked about it with my friends, where it really is almost, it feels a lot like early iPhone SDK days.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting a lot of these apps that are people just trying to figure it out, just trying to, like, they're doing the bare minimum to just say, okay, this is how this works. Right, here's a window app, here's a window pane, and all the metaphors are based off of what they already know, right? So like, I know iPad, how to build an iPad app, and so mm-hmm. the layouts are like an iPad layout with like tiles of, you know, assets here, and you know, and because they're not even coming from like Mac background, right, where like a multi-window pane is kind of like, you know, a thing, right? So like, now they're like, okay, I can mess with multiple windows and different types of sizing and mechanics, and like mm-hmm. they're not even touching 3D yet, they're not even touching like even like messing with these planes to do more interactive things. They're not realizing like you don't even need the window. One thing I noticed, I posted that video of like World Builder, which is a very old like virtual reality short story, and it talks a lot about the sort of metaphors that are what we see now with a Vision Pro, where even some of the things that the character does in there, where he's in the VR space basically, but like he's using his hands to like, and his wrist to be sort of the place where you see your controls, right? These virtual controls, and you interact with your controls with your hands. Like, so like your palette shows up matching right next to your hands, and then you can just change and change the dials that way. And then like drag and drop, say drag and drop some color into that, you know, into your space or into your 3D models, right? You can then like do gestures that will scale or rearrange or modify the 3D models, right? And that's the type of thing that was like, okay, like we're beginning to see that type of metaphors with like, there was, I forget what it was called, like Spatial Paint was an app. It did the similar thing. It was not, it's still very janky in its current design, but it's the idea is there, where you like, when you bring up your hand, it sees your hand and it puts a plane, it anchors a plane right next to it, a window right next to it, and then you can interact with it with the palette, with a color palette. You just put it away, and then you just start drawing.
Yeah,
right. It's that type of like, oh, like this is the starting point of like new interaction metaphors that not even Apple thought of, right? Or like was thinking about, because they're still stuck on like the pinchy.
yeah.
pinch and drag, and I was like, okay, that's a good starting point, but it doesn't make you look, it's not as cool as, you know, this metaphor.
So while today Vision Pro is a little too young for us to have any favorite apps we love on the platform yet,
mm-hmm.
There are still in use the other platforms from Apple, and we thought today we would talk a little bit about, in honor of like 17.4 coming out and making a big splash today, bigger than I actually anticipated, thought we would talk about some apps that we love. And the thing, I thought 17.4 was just going to be mostly about the EU stuff, which doesn't really affect us directly. You know, but in fact, one of the coolest things that came out, it affects one of my favorite apps that I use every single day. So I'm going to start with my ongoing love affair with YNAB. Of all things, You Need a Budget, it's called. I don't know if they call themselves You Need a Budget anymore, or just YNAB. But like, this is a budgeting app, an app that I started using on the Mac. It used to be a Mac app a long time ago, and it evolved into a web app. And then some years ago, they created an iPhone app, which is how I primarily use it. But I do sometimes go on the web. And I remember when they actually put out an ad for the iOS position, and I don't know who got it, if the same person's still working on it, but did a really good job. If you want to see a really good app, like it is a well-designed budgeting app, I gotta say. And today it's like, it's a zero-based budgeting system. If you never heard about it, you can go to the website and look at it. But the idea is that all of your money, you assign all your money to some kind of budget category, and then you input your transactions and you assign them obviously to the category. So it's kind of like an envelope system. And their emphasis beyond that would make some a little different is that they say you roll with it. Like if things change, the app will tell you that you've gone over budget or whatever, but it's okay. It makes it really easy for you to just move money around. So the idea is you always want to keep your budget balanced. You don't want to be, you know, over budget on things. You want to make sure you're accounting for things all the time. And it forces you to basically prioritize your spending and your saving and determine what is it that I want in life money-wise. And then you make that concrete by creating a budget. Then you assign actual money to it. And then you evolve it over time as, you know, sometimes during the same month, month to month, day to day, it can change. And then if you use this system over time, you just start growing the amount of money you have saved because you've had priorities for saving for things. And so you'll just see naturally the money kind of grow in your bank account, which is what my experience was. It was a very similar experience to a lot of other people, and I've been doing it for years. But I wanted to talk about it today because specifically 17.4 released what apparently might be called Finance Kit. I'm not sure that that's what we got the while we're recording here. That's what we got from the Slack. But there is an API integration that allows any budgeting app, not just YNAB. A bunch of apps announced this today to import transactions from the Apple Card, the Apple Cash Card, and the Apple Card Savings Account. And that's actually cool because one of the most painful things since I've had an Apple Card and using YNAB is I've had to go into this app like every day and manually put in all my transactions like that I get from like the Apple Card, the Apple Savings Account, for instance. Because you know how that thing automatically rolls it in? You know, you automatically get your cash, you know, goes in your savings account. Mm-hmm. Well, imagine it's like every day you have like, you know, 70 cents, a dollar, whatever, and you just keep getting these little transactions you have to keep reconciling all the time. Right. It's very annoying. So this will be helpful because I'll still put in my transaction when I spend money and stuff, but some of these things like the stuff coming in from the card, you know, from the savings account, now you can automatically import that stuff just like you could from your bank account, and then you can reconcile it. And I don't know exactly how it works because I wasn't sure what the API was, but it might be Finance Kit. It works. It seems like it works on device because if you change your iPhone or something, you have to unlink it from YNAB and link it again, and also updates in the background with background refresh. Okay. So I'm guessing it's an API that works with Apple Wallet on your device for security reasons. That's my guess. Oh, and then
that kind of makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what YNAB does is they take the transaction data and they said they can only get the last like 30 days or something. And then they'll obviously upload it to their server. So that it syncs with all the devices. But I think that means that the first device that you link, I think is like the Oracle Truth for the data from the wallet. So it makes sense to do it on your phone. Not necessarily an iPad, but so anyway, it works. And I think there's other budget apps that replaced that came out that, you know, that are out there. Mint used to do this apparently, but Mint is no more. Right.
Yeah.
So, there's other ones that announced it. And so it's very cool. And I highly recommend YNAB if you're looking for a budgeting app.
What's the pricing?
Oh yeah. It is a monthly plan or annual, so it's like $100 a year now if you pay annually.
All right.
So yeah, I think it's worth it because it's ended up saving me so much money, like in helping.
And
me
they
save
have money, you know? A weirdly free 34-day trial.
Yeah, 30. Because you gotta get through an entire month.
Four extra days to like decide, which is that's very reasonable.
It's you can also add like family members to it. Like I did this, so you can, they have like something where... they have, including they have, you can share it with family, friends, other close knit people. So it's like one subscription can actually work for a group of up to six people. The only thing is you have to trust the person who's paying the subscription because I think that person can look at the budgets, but the other people can't look at the other budgets. So it's like, you can get your own private budget, but technically I think the owner of the account can look at it, if I remember correctly, something like that.
Oh.
So it's meant for close people. It's not meant for you to just use it for like randos or whatever, but but it's like you can if it's for your family or maybe your close friends or something. And I've tried to get people in my life to use YNAB with this. I was like, look, it's free. You don't even have to like pay. Like, I'm paying for it already. You could use one of my slots. But, you know, I've been unsuccessful so far in spreading the Why Not religion. But I'm a fanboy. I don't know what to say. I even got a T-shirt from them because I said something on Twitter, I think, once, and they sent me a T-shirt.
Very nice.
So
very nice.
I will admit that I am a biased person because I've been using it for years, but it's, I think.
You know, this is actually interesting because I am, obviously, now that Mint's gone, I have to find something to replace it. And sadly enough, Mint was a favorite app of mine from the standpoint of, like, it was probably the first app that did a really good job of giving you a really good snapshot of your entire, you know, financial situation. Probably one of the first, I think, in my mind, that felt like, okay, these graphs make sense. Oh, I'm spending this much on this. Oh, you know, you could filter down to the things of, like, why did I spend so much on food? And it would give you the pie chart, and then you can break it down to the transactions or your you know, your net worth or your net, you know, your or your assets over time. I mean, those things are just really valuable in terms of, like, giving you a reasonable sense of, like, if you're going in the right or wrong direction during the year or during multiple years. And definitely was one of the things that got me more or less back on track with a lot of stuff.
YNAB has some charting like that, but it's on the web app more than it is on it's very limited on the iOS app. But
that makes sense to me, right? Like, I feel like sometimes people, it goes back to, like, this idea about respecting the platforms, right? Of, like, each one, you know, the web does something better than the mobile does, you know, because mobile is much more of, like, a quick hit, just trying to get a sense of, like, just something very, like, fast paced versus, like, I think you want to take more time and have more screen real estate, you do it on the web or you do it on your desktop.
Yeah, there's even a watch app too. But yeah, the mobile stuff is really more about entering transactions quickly and checking, like, what your balance is and what's left in some budget category quickly, so you can make decisions throughout your day. Right. It's trying to remove friction of the part of the process where you have to actually input stuff all the time. It's trying to make that easy by just letting you do it wherever you are.
Do you have any service, Aaron, any web services or SaaS services, programs that you love?
You love. Or do you hate, maybe? Anything?
Or you despise? Jira.
Jira.
We're not going to mention that. So. I think I mentioned Training Peaks before.
Training Peaks? Okay.
Yeah, that's my. But I don't really use it that much, so I haven't done any, like, big events where I need to spend a whole year's worth of training. But if you're doing that, that's a great, great app. They have a iOS app, a web app. And I think the real big thing is, if you're working with a coach, then their whole platform is designed so, like, coach sends you workouts and then you give your feedback. So I did that for a while, but since I don't have any big events, I'm not really using it.
You're not doing any triathlons anymore? Or?
I haven't for. Since 2020.
Another thing the pandemic destroyed.
Yeah. I was about to say, you can come back to it now.
No, I can. I just...
Yeah. Might even be more competition.
You know, I don't know, Aaron, if you saw... I don't know if you follow Casey Neistat at all.
But no,
well, he's been a lifelong runner, and he had a video recently about accomplishing his, like, lifelong dream of running this, like, particular time in a marathon. And I think he just recently did it in his 40s. Like, he tried over and over and over again with a trainer, with a coach and everything. It was actually a very inspiring video. It got me pumped up. I was like, I want to go outside and run. And I didn't actually do that because it was, like, raining or something. But, you know, if I was Aaron, if I was already a runner, it would have probably made me go outside and run.
Yeah, probably not.
Aaron would still probably...
Starting in the rain when you're just starting out, that's really... way to kill your passion.
Make sure you stretch too, you know. Don't just go out there.
Is that true, Aaron? Should you stretch before you run?
You got to do the right kind of stretching.
Okay.
Like, dynamic stretching.
Yeah, that was like what it was when I did martial arts a lot. It was like more dynamic stretching beforehand and then static stretching at the end after we're, warmed up. Okay, cool. So Training Peaks. I'll try to find a URL for that. Okay, so that's...
Do you Do you have any creative or productivity apps, Steve, that you love?
What about you? This is you haven't done one yet.
Me? Well, I just said Mint.
Oh, Mint! You counted that. I thought that was just part of our whole conversation. Isn't Mint done? Is Mint done over?
There are a lot of apps I got confused here on my personal list. My personal list that have died, so I can briefly talk about the ones that died.
I thought we were talking about ones you could use today, not ones that are dead. But okay.
I don't know if it's dead. Let me rephrase this.
No, Trello, it is, isn't it? Isn't Mint gone?
Mint is gone. Yeah, so, Mint's gone. I have to find a replacement.
So Mint is gone. R.I.P. Mint. Yeah. Okay, so it is back to me then. What you're saying?
Yes.
So my next app is one I use every day and recently got updated. So another good one to talk about. That would be OmniFocus 4, version 4, I think is the latest one. It is, it took them, I don't know how many years they've been working on this one. I bought version 3, maybe 2. I've been using this for a long time. I spent, hundreds of dollars buying all the apps. They recently upgraded, I think it's all built in Swift UI now. And it works cross-platform. In a true way, like the old app, they had an iPad version, iOS version, a Mac version, but the features weren't all the same. Now they're much more closely aligned, if not completely aligned, mm-hmm. And so that's really cool. And OmniFocus 4, they improved the user interface experience. It doesn't look that different at first glance. And so I was kind of disappointed in it at first, but then when I've been using it, it does have a smoother interaction paradigm. There's more stuff more properties you can access kind of inline without jumping, especially on the iOS app, without drilling down screen to screen to screen like you did before. And it does seem to be pretty speedy. And if you've never used OmniFocus, it is probably the mother of all task management applications, especially well designed for people who take GTD, getting things done seriously. Mm-hmm. But you can use it for a lot of things because it has tagging in it, folders, you've different kinds of projects. You can use task paper format for templates, you can do that. It has a whole automation thing. I think you can do a JavaScript and some other Apple script or something. I haven't done all the automation stuff yet. Task paper stuff is useful though, just so you can create a shortcut. This is something that Max Sparky has a OmniFocus field guide for version 3. And in there, he shows how you can create like on your iPad or something, a shortcut, I guess now on the Mac, I haven't tried it, but you can create a shortcut that uses task paper to generate a task list. So if you have something you have to do regularly, but you can have this thing, OmniFocus can do multiple reminders. It can do defer things. It has all these features. And the biggest one is probably that you can slice and dice your database with different perspectives. So, you have all these different tasks, all these different projects, and you can organize them through different means, through tagging, through folders, whatever. But then you can pick a view of that data that is basically a filter over your whole database. And so you can say, I just want to see the stuff that is for work, that is tagged like this, that is due here, whatever you want to do. And then it'll just show you that stuff, and you have all these options for what data to show on your screen, et cetera. So it is a very complicated app in that respect. You can tinker with it forever, and there's books have been written about it. But every time I've tried to use something else, every time, and I've tried so many other task management apps, I just keep coming back to OmniFocus because I always find some limitation in it. Like at work, I've tried to use Microsoft To Do, and it's it's too simplistic for me.
Jeez, Microsoft To Do just feels so, I opened it up for the first time the other day, and I was like, okay, first it feels like Teams, so that's already a dud.
And second,
it just to do one entry for a task, it was trying to encourage me to go here instead of just let me start typing.
Are you talking about the same app? Because the To Do app is pretty simple.
It might be, I might be talking about OneNote. Which is still true. Which
OneNote's a whole other thing. We can talk about OneNote, but I've tried other things. Reminders actually has gotten better, but still, it's like
Reminders is one of those weird apps that it can't. It's almost like Notes, where Notes I feel like is really lightweight and amazing. Like that's one of my favorite apps that I like to use.
We use Notes for this podcast.
Yeah, it's just so multifunctional. And then you go to Reminders, and it's like you can technically turn it into like a Kanban of a way to like set up reminders, and it can turn into like a project management software. But it's like I don't think that was
you
would use it.
I really hope OmniFocus adds Kanban. I think I heard a podcast with one on the OmniFocus podcast. I think that was mentioned. Mm-hmm. Like they have this new product that took them years to make, and it's all cross-platform and stuff. And now they can start making like some more advanced features, I hope, because that's the one thing I will say about OmniFocus is that there's other apps that like have, I mean, probably arguably nicer looking UI and have other features. Like this doesn't currently have any kind of collaboration story. If you have multiple people, like Todoist does, for instance, like you can have a whole team of people with like to-dos and stuff. This is very much solo kind of going, which is one of the reasons why it's tough for me to use sometimes at work, because I don't want to bring my entire database onto my work computer and the web app. So that's why I started trying to use some other things at work. But for everything else in my life outside of work, where I try to keep that on a separate machine, OmniFocus helps me keep track of all the myriad things. Definitely highly recommend at least giving it a try. And if you do buy it, just shell out for the pro version. You won't regret it. It has lots of extra features. And they give you really generous upgrades. Like I think they took 50 bucks or something. They took like half price or something for me to upgrade from the old version. It was something like that. It was like a really steep discount. So they definitely take care of the long-time customers if you go that route. You can do the monthly thing. I just buy it all out for the they have a price for you to like just buy it once for the term of that version. Like I think this will go until version 5 and then you have to buy again or something. And now it just works across platforms. It's actually cheaper. I think it's cheaper than it used to be, because you used to have to buy it for each individual platform, you know, separate price. Anyway, so that's mine. OmniFocus. I could talk about OmniFocus all day, but we have to move on. What about you, Kotro?
I want to say in terms of something like that, I think Trello, just briefly, I've always used Trello as my sort of guide, and before it was bought by Atlantis and Atlantean, and then they decided to have like a 10 board like limit. Which
sucks.
Is fine. I mean, I'm honestly not against the idea. The problem is I had so many boards.
Yeah, I mean, no,
I had to pick and choose.
Yeah, it's totally understandable. You got to limit something, but
yeah. I moved on to GitHub Projects, which is a little more, I don't know. It's okay. It's one of those things where, like, if I had to pick, all right, to pick between like this or Jira, this is winning every single time.
<That's true. laughs>
All right, like Jira is like if the Backstreet Boys came up with software. Okay, the Backstreet Boys.
Boys are awesome. What are you talking about?
I know. Let me rephrase it. It's like if IBM was to come up with a modern piece of management software, this is what their consultants would have come up with.
And
I feel like Jira was like just this nice, lightweight. I think I have a type, I'm realizing, and that's just like I like very focused, lightweight apps that just does the thing that they're designed to do, right? Doesn't try to be extra, doesn't try to be anything beyond what it's not. Like I have a myriad of options if I wanted, you know, a different type of functionality from an app. I just want this app to do one thing well. So I feel like Trello was one, but that's not what I'm thinking about right now in terms of like an app that I really love. And you know, like one of the things that I think, like I used to work a lot in Illustrator, and I started to get really good in Illustrator, but when I found out about Sketch, I was thinking like, oh, this is a nice Mac app. It's kind of dumb. And it's kind of like very bare bone, and it's just a bare bone Illustrator. Okay, that's fine, right? And primarily, I used it as very basic wireframing. In the beginning, I was like, okay, here it kind of works in like a very short, in a very simplistic context. And as it got popular, right, and this is pre Figma days, it became like the standard for which you build wireframes in. And it was a great Mac app. I mean, it still is. It's still very lightweight. It does the thing that it's meant to do. And it's probably to its detriment that it's a Mac app, because it's very specifically built for the Mac.
That's why I always liked it, though.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I love it. is because it is, you know, it is consistent with just being what it's good at. It has an iPhone app that's much more of a view portal. It has a website that is also used as much more of like, you know, bare minimum like tweaks and commentary that you can do on that. But there's no expectation that you would do your editing on the web versus like, at least back, I haven't touched the web version in a while, so maybe that's changed. But the thing that makes, that differentiates this versus Figma is that this doesn't necessarily encourage the cross collaboration, real time collaboration that you can do in Figma.
Where they do Figma, have you can just the online stuff they have. See, I haven't used it so long that the last time I touched the online stuff was with your subscription. That was a couple years ago, and I thought it was fine. It was definitely easy to use, but it wasn't.
You can, I think you can, like, if I like, it's, you can see each other moving with their cursor, but you couldn't really see like whether or not like if I made a change or you made a change, right? Like in Figma, you can kind of see like stuff moving around and being edited in real time. And that was its kind of like its winning strategy is like, you know, you can have thousands of cooks in the kitchen, adding and changing the layout in real time.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think is what ends up happening is that it just gets really laggy, and it encourages horrible behaviors like, let's put everything in this Figma file and let's make a million of them and let's make it hard to find any of them. And then like the source of truth gets mixed because like, You can set up a design system in Figma, but everybody breaks it. You know, it just takes one person to break the Figma file and then copy and paste his or her changes into another Figma file, and then your whole system is broken. So I think
does it work better on Sketch?
Yeah, not really. I mean, Sketch is not designed for it, really. Honestly, like Sketch is designed much, you know, and I think it's still stayed true to itself in that sense, where it's much. It's much better as a seems like you can allow for cross collaboration, but it's
so yes, yeah, they have something, and it's like it looks like the simplicity of it with the, like the Mac appness of it.
It's not the kind of thing that I actually encourage as a behavior. I think that's sharing? One of the things that's it's like real time. Yeah, I think. It's one of those things where I get the point of it, but I also think it is it doesn't allow you to sort of commit to it doesn't allow you to focus on making sure that the design is consistent and it flows and it's organized right. It's just like, let's slap these objects in here. And you know about Photoshop layers, like it's very easy. And particularly in Illustrator, it was very easy to just let those things just be labeled by their default. So you get like object 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And they're never like, they're never nested correctly. Right.
So you might XD be like, was like that too for me when I was using XD when that
still XD was horrible. Like the first early versions, you couldn't even reorder the layers. Oh, it was brutal. The way I look at it is like, it's just this is a more of an opinionated point of view. But one of the things that I liked about Sketch was like, it was very easy to just slice and dice, modify. Once you got the key commands in, you can just press O for oval, R for rectangle, you know, and just command G to group stuff, command G to group stuff. It was just real easy to just get in, slice and dice, do the work, and then just produce. Very quickly, it was probably one of my favorite tools in that.
So, do you still use it?
I still use it for just basic, like if I'm trying to like ideate on a design. Like we've used it for like Kanji Love and to the Watch app, and then even before that, I was doing it. But I'll use it for like game design, or I'll use it for like asset creation. So I'll just put it like if I want to do like a logo or an app icon, I'll use Sketch like before anything else. And if Sketch can do more or less most of the things that Illustrator can do. It's only if you're just trying to do something really absurd with like a really high precision, you would use something like Illustrator.
I feel like Sketch is really perfect for app design.
It is.
Like, it's always, it always felt, and I haven't used in a few versions, I guess, but it always felt like that was the every time I tried something else, like XD or straight up Photoshop or a little bit, I tried Figma. I was always like, I was like, I wish this just worked like Sketch, you know? And I just, that's what I wanted. I wanted Sketch, and I couldn't have it.
I don't know, Aaron, what you enjoy
the Figma? Look at the ways you can, like, we're looking at the webpage right now for those listening, and they have all these animated demos. I'm like, look at all the cool, like, moving stuff around, all these collaborations going on in Sketch. They make it look so fun.
I use it a little bit. It's not bad.
Which one, Sketch or Figma?
Oh, Sketch. Figma. No, forget about Figma.
don't hate on it on my account. I mean, if you love Figma, I just couldn't.
I got used to using Illustrator before I ever tried Sketch, so, like, I guess some of the limitations of it can annoy me sometimes, but I guess, Illustrator is probably overkill for most of the things I use it for. I could probably use Sketch instead.
Like if you're doing precision, like, Booleans between vector objects, or if you're doing complex patterns, or if you're doing particularly high-precision Bezier curves, or complex procedural like pattern generation, you would want to use Illustrator, or very complex morphing of gradients, you would use Illustrator. If you're just doing a simple, like, flat colored icon or something like that, you can just do it in Sketch. Sketch does does the majority of the easy stuff. So, but we can move on.
Sketch is awesome, everybody. Try out Sketch if you haven't already.
Yes. Yes.
Aaron, do you have anyone and another app?
Let's see. Most of my apps are like fitness related. So. I don't know like it as another, like,
which one? It could be an app you hate, I guess.
Reluctantly uses Strava. It's like
Strava.
What's
Strava?
The social network for athletes, I guess is their pitch.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
I kind of hate it, but it's the thing of, like, I know.
Kind of love it.
Do people have hot takes on Strava?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Whatever, it's the whole thing of, like, if it's not on Strava, it didn't happen.
That kind of thing. Is this a cycling running app?
Yeah.
Wait, what does that mean, if it's not on Strava, it didn't happen?
It's like, it means if you didn't upload your run or bike ride on there, then it might as well not have happened.
Interesting.
So.
Okay.
So all the runners and the bikers use Strava.
It's got all these social features and things that I don't really use, but I just use it as kind of a training log. It's like alternate supplement to training.
I think I remember you talking about this before.
Is this like Slopes for runners?
Don't compare it to Slopes. Slopes is like its own amazing category. Come on.
Yes, getslopes.com. Amazing app that we don't use.
We don't use it because we're not near snow.
We don't snowboard. Maybe Aaron will use it.
Yeah, if I ever get out snowboarding again, I haven't been out for a while.
But yeah, this Strava's website says record, sweat, share, kudos.
Very nice, very nice.
Very nice. So Strava, everybody, try out Strava, especially if you're a biker or a runner and you want to get kudos.
If you are, then you probably use it already.
Yeah, you probably don't need us to tell you.
That's the thing,
if you're like getting started and... give it a try. It's like for like encouraging your friends and stuff like that, and showing, oh, cool, this is what I did today, or you can follow people and do all the usual social media stuff of comment and post pictures and videos and stuff of your activities and things like that. Even add some chat feature or something that I've never used in the last few months. But so they're trying to be the everything social media.
How do you chat while riding a bike?
No, I don't think it's for while you're riding. It's like just for like if your friends are on there and like you only interact them through this app, then now you can chat commenting.
Can they make a Vision Pro version of it so that like you put your Vision Pro while you're biking?
Hopefully not.
And then you can be like, post to, and you can have Siri like, post to my Strava account.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that I use it a lot for is like creating and sharing routes for, especially for bike rides. It's not, you don't really, I don't really do like crazy complicated long runs, but for like riding, if you want to do something you've never been before, then, you know, like map out your route and then you can send it to your Garmin bike computer or whatever other model you have, and you get turn by turn directions and things like that. Mm. So,
I want an excuse though to bring this one up. One I use every day, but I decided while we're sitting here that I want to talk about it because it is a wonderful example of an indie app, and that is Bike Outliner. It is exactly as it sounds. It is an outliner you'd use while riding a bike. No, it is an outliner.
I was about to say, it's like, no. I believe you.
I think it's called Bike because it's like the Steve Jobs quote that like, yeah, computer the, is a, you know, a bike is a computer.
Computer
is
for the mind. Bike for
bicycle
the mind.
Bicycle for the mind, yeah. So what I like about this app is if you ever try to find an outliner, I always find a hard time trying to find an outliner. But, outlining, this is a writing app that is built around the format of outliner. So I guess Omni Outliner has one, but I haven't used it in a while. What I like about it is it has one of the smoothest like writing outlining experiences. It's just the way that the animation works for, you know, the writing, the way it has a certain feel, which is hard to describe, but you know what I mean. Like when you are in an app and you're typing, the subtle way that the app responds to your input, to how the animation timings work, that kind of thing. An application that you're just writing in can have its own kind of feel. You know what I mean? You know, like if you use OneNote and how you hate your life while using OneNote, but you know, when you're writing that. But this,
why would you put yourself through that hell?
I don't anymore. I stopped. I went to just using text files in like Obsidian. So, but we can talk about that app sometime. That's the one I use every day. So, Bike Outliner though has just this really wonderful typing experience. It has a lot of features in it, but I like that it's an indie app. I think it's just one guy. It's Jesse Grosjean. I don't know. Hogbay Software, we'll say. Hogbay Software. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's pretty cheap. It's a nice outliner. I've used it to do outlining. I think outlining is a great way to organize your thoughts. So I've used it for like brainstorming a app idea, and I start coming up with stuff, and it just kind of naturally, it makes it really easy to kind of naturally put things into a rough hierarchy as you're going. You know, it's good for that kind of thing. Because, and then you can, you know, you can obviously collapse and open up things and outline. If you never really got into outlining, it's kind of hard to describe how useful outlining is. But there's like a subset of, I think, Mac users even that have loved outliners. You know, outliners are a thing. And I'm kind of one of those people that loves outlining. So it's a very fast, fluid app that's kind of just a joy to type in. So highly recommend it as a great example of an indie app. As you said, Kotro, it's an app that tries to do one thing really well, be a really good writing outliner, you know, and just does the things outliners do. It's like a, you know, you can write in it, you can move pieces around, you know, you can kind of jump around the parts, you can do all the things you might want to expect an outliner to do, and that's it. I don't even think you can put images or anything. I'm not sure. I don't even know if you can do that. I think it's just about text. Okay. So very cool. That's mine.
Okay. Cool. All right, do you want to go next, Aaron, or? You have another one on the docket, or should I?
Well, it's Europe.
You're good. You can go first.
Okay. While you're thinking of one.
Your myriad
of choices. I'm going to go back to an old faithful or a favorite, even though I don't use it as much because I don't need to use it as much because of, I might come back to it eventually, but a program called Modo.
Modo.
It is Modo, M-O-D-O. It's originally, the company was called Luxology, but now it's they were bought by the Foundry, which is sort of like a company that builds 3D and visual effects type of applications. Usually, they're very heavy. They're, you know, so if you think of like 3ds Max or Maya, Cinema 4D, those types of apps, where they're general purpose 3D, for lack of a better word, 3D asset creation. Application. You could think of them like a pseudo version of like a 3D version of Photoshop, but they do sort of cover a majority of the pipelines that you would to make a 3D asset. So from the modeling a character, say modeling a character, to texturing the character, to creating a 3D sculpt, a high poly version of the character, to rigging the character, giving it the skeletons, to animating the character, and then to doing high res render for that character, the 3D character. And they generally have been more of a general purpose. Like, they don't particularly serve any one industry. They're not particularly well known. I mean, they're known, but they're not particularly like the top of like a list of 3D artists. So you would see like on the low end, maybe Blender, which is actually inspired a lot of its UI from Modo originally. They've already admitted to such. And because Modo is such a very clean type of interface, but it's also and it's still kind of goes against my own, you know, personal, you know, this whole mantra that we were just talking about, like it does like one thing well. Modo originally was known as a modeler, so you could do things where even highlighting certain spots of a 3D asset was really pain in the butt. It still is. I don't even know why people don't steal half of Modo's selection tools. It's just absurdly easy to use and then navigate through one edge or one poly or one object at a time and then manipulate that object. A lot of it is just tinkering and tweaking and teasing, you know, a lot of the time when you're doing 3D modeling. And it's just like, I've never been... it's not true, but it's very rare that I'll find a piece of software that I just love jumping back into. Like it's like a warm blanket. You know, it just once you get it, it just feels wonderful to use. You you're slicing and dicing. I feel like every time I try to do the same thing with Blender, it just doesn't click for whatever reason. Like Blender is always going to feel like a cheap knockoff. And it just, because it has its own set of opinions, and most of the time I don't necessarily agree with them because doesn't, it just gets in my way versus like gets out of my way. Like, I want to go and edit this object. Just let me double click on it and let me edit it, you know, stop trying to like switch me into like object selection mode versus editing mode. You know, you have to do like,
don't be the Vim of editors. Be the Emacs.
Oh my goodness! Yes, please don't be the Vim of editors. Please be the Pico of editors.
Don't create another whole. I was joking. I don't want to create a holy war here.
I'll create the holy war.
I'm actually trying to learn Vim again, like really learn it again. Why? Basic key bindings, but because you know, Vim is good editor. I don't know. People keep saying it is. I want to try NeoVim, so I just downloaded it. We'll see what happens.
I mean, it's like saying. I mean, here's the thing that I used to use
Emacs. I used to be an Emacs guy, like a hardcore Emacs guy.
I love Emacs. I mean, I loved Emacs. I loved Pico. I loved Sublime.
Yeah, I did a whole bunch of Perl programming. Built a lot of Perl stuff in Emacs.
I loved Text Wrangler for a while.
Yes, I used Text Wrangler. Yeah, and BBEdit is what the full version of it is, right? Yeah. I used to use TextMate, which is what DHH apparently used.
Yeah.
Apparently, TextMate was amazing.
TextMate was amazing. It was kind of almost the precursor for me before I went to Sublime, and I stayed on Sublime. And like, I was like, oh, you know, I was like, oh, you can't. Even when VS Code came out, it was very clear that VS Code was going to be the winner of between the two. I was like, I loved Sublime so much. Yeah. And ever since, I've been like hoping for an editor to come out and be like, hey, I'm the new Sublime, which I think Zed feels close to that. Zed. It doesn't have the same level of extensibility that VS Code has right now, but it does feel like, and maybe because it's a Mac only app, that's probably why it feels so natural and smooth on the Mac. it's just so lightweight and just, you know, does what it's supposed to do.
I just downloaded Zed, so I'm gonna give Zed a try. So that's two that you've just done there at the end there, Zed. And
I know,
Modo.
I was just sneaking them through. Maybe I'm just doing it for Aaron's sake, just in case he just says, you know, I just hate all the rest of these apps.
we could keep doing this forever, but we're running out of time. So Aaron gets the last word here. He has any last app to do.
You got to make it good.
I don't know how it's, I guess, I think I've mentioned this one before. Another fitness app called Zwift.
Swift?
Zwift with a Z.
Zwift.
Yeah, Z. Z-W-I-F-T.
Oh my God, Apple Notes doesn't want me to write Zwift. It keeps saying it's Swift.
Yeah, but it's a virtual training app for stationary indoor biking. It's like designed by a video game developer, and
okay,
it's just a fun thing to distract yourself during the boring winter months when you can't get outside.
Same. Any one of those.
Some people do it all year, but usually I kind of shut it down in the Wait. Spring, summer.
So that bike, is that something that you have to buy custom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So no, it's like, well, there's all kind of options. You can get one of the trainers that connect to it and you put your own bike on it, or you can get like a indoor bike that works with it. But
okay.
Yeah. So that's part of the complication of, it's not like Peloton where you just like buy the thing and it has a subscription and it's like, it just works. It's like requires a little bit more setup.
So actually, now that you've mentioned this idea or this product, how reasonable would you be to like come up with like a Vision Pro version of that, right?
There is some people have like basically used this in Vision Pro by using the iPad version or something like that.
They
should make a Vision Pro.
It just seems like very hot having this thing on your face.
I don't think
you get very, very sweaty.
You can take the light shield off, you know.
Yeah,
You can. Some people do that.
Like a recipe for ruining your $3,000 headset. I'll send you a video of the reviewer who reviews his fitness apps and gadgets and riding on this app with Vision Pro, and the whole thing is like soaked.
Oh God, that can't be good for it.
The whole light, yeah, it's just,
I can't be good for it.
He's brave enough to ruin his hardware for the views.
You know, tax deduction, and he's probably got insurance.
Oh man, does AppleCare cover sweat damage?
Probably not.
It wouldn't cover water damage, right? It's not meant for athletic. I don't know if they say that anymore. No, it does not seem like
the same guy who took this thing out on, took the Vision Pro out on a real outside bike ride.
Oh, I think I saw a video of someone trying to do that, and it didn't work.
I think I shared
anything outdoor.
Terrible idea.
Anything outdoor is like all bets are off.
Yeah. He said the battery died on him when he was riding, but I guess it still ended up in one piece.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden you're wearing a blindfold.
I completely forget about that. That fact is like the moment, like if you pull off the cable comes off or whatever, it goes pitch black and you are screwed. Yeah.
You don't want to be
doing anything active.
You don't be going fast.
Yikes.
Or really moving at all.
Stay safe out there if you're using Vision Pros. We don't recommend you use them outside on a bike.
Don't be a hero.
Follow Apple's instructions and common sense, please.
Yes.
Okay, so cool. I think we went through a lot of good apps today. Hopefully you will check out some of them. I got my work cut out for me to make sure I get links to all of these amazing apps that we love.
The whole point of this exercise was to sort of, you know, one of the things that people love doing is dunking on all the apps. And these are all apps that people spent so much time building. But on the flip side, like, there are apps out there that I think sometimes people forget, like, are really good. And, you know, in a bizarre way, as app developers, it's something to keep conscious of like, why that is, right? Like, to think about it as you build your own apps, like, you know, what is it about this particular app that makes it so good for you or in general?
And I think when you're, especially when it's an app that you used for a long time, you can forget that. And I think that's one of the things that, back to the beginning here, when we were talking about the John Prosser's review, that was kind of a thing that his review reminded me of, you know, like that.
Yeah.
There is magic to good software. There can be. And that is a long tradition in the Apple ecosystem. And there's been a lot of controversial stuff swirling around in the Apple space last couple of years, you know, and it's good sometimes just to remember, like, you know, that there's a reason why so many of us really love these platforms that people have spent decades of their lives working on them, that people spend their entire careers at Apple, et cetera. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, some of the best software that I've ever used is on Apple platforms made by really dedicated individuals and small teams. And yes. I still use some of them to this very day.
Yes, indeed. And so with that, that's all we have for today. You can learn more about FillyCoco at fillycoco.org. There you will find links to our Slack group, meetup schedule, and contact info. If you're feeling generous, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your podcast platform of choice is. And please, share us with all your friends. And one more thing. We're back to dad jokes, people.
Yes.
And these are really, these are real humans that crafted these horrible jokes just for your entertainment. Some of you probably already heard, and maybe I've repeated, but who knows? All right, first one. How do you tell HTML from HTML5?
I don't know how.
Try it out in Internet Explorer. Did it work? No, it's HTML5.
Oh, geez, that is so old. Will people even get that? I don't know how young is our audience.
Oh, that's true. Oh, there you go. That's why it's a dad joke.
That's like a grandfather joke, internet time.
Fair enough. Maybe I've said this one before, but just in case. What do you call a programmer from Finland?
I don't know. What?
Nerdic?
Nerdic? Oh, God. This is like quintessential dad joke territory right there. One more. Right.
There are three kinds of lies according to programmers. Lies, damn lies, and benchmarks.
Oh, that's a classic. Classic.
That's a classic.
I love it.
Till next time, good luck on your own developer journey. We will cheer for you always. You don't even need the window.